informative radio for the Sunshine State.
Looking for car shows? Then look no further than flacarshows.com. On your computer or on your mobile device, flacarshows.com is a comprehensive list of automotive events, plus videos and news articles. Whether you're looking for car shows, cruise-ins, meetups, automotive festivals, cars and coffees, or anything else relating to an internal combustion engine, then this is a site for you. Check it out online or on your phone at flacarshows.com.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
That crowd might discourage them. Looks like we've hit the rush hour.
Well, hello, this is Jackie Hicks. You're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. You're tuned in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars. I'm your show host, Robert. Run your computers and Google Tantalk1340.com. And you can see us live here in the studios in downtown Clearwater. Don't forget to check out our website, GulfstreamMotorsports.com, where you can find out all about us. And if you've missed any of our past shows, check out Nostalgic Radio and Cars. Yeah, there's 717, 18, 19, somewhere around there, shows that you can listen to. You can go back. You can see how Nostalgic Radio and Cars has evolved over the last, going on to our 15th year. Anyway, I'm going to welcome everybody here to the show tonight, all my listeners and the guys here in the studio. At any rate, we got a very special guest for you tonight. We are going to be going back into time a little bit, and we're going to talk a little bit about two movies that came out, very popular movies. I am a huge James Bond fan, and this one particular movie was in 1969, and it was on Her Majesty's Secret Service with George Lazenby and Diana Riggs and Telly Savalas. It was a really good movie. And, from a car guy's perspective, the star of the show, or the star of the movie, rather, was this 1969 Cougar convertible factory 428 Cobra Jet car. Red car with a red interior, XR7. Pretty cool piece. Convertible, no less. And this is a car that Diana Riggs was driving in the movie. And there's a number of scenes with this car. At any rate, the gentleman that is coming on our show this evening was actually involved in that movie from the perspective that he was the stunt coordinator and one of the stunt drivers for that particular movie. He also appeared in the 1970 movie with Steve McQueen, Le Mans. And he was one of the stunt drivers in that particular movie and one of the stunt coordinators as well. So he's got a really interesting story because he was there. He was actually young. He was in his mid-20s back in the day. Now, what's interesting is this gentleman has a racing background. So that kind of played to his advantage a little bit. So this, you hear me talking about some of these old-time race car drivers from back in the day. You know, the Pinella Joneses, the Dan Gurneys, the Mario Andretti's, and people like that. They used to get into a roundy-round car and race that car. Then they would jump into a road race car. Then they might jump into a drag car. Then they might jump into another road race car. And then they might jump into an open-wheel car. And maybe, if they're lucky, even a Formula One car or an Indy car. So these guys, you know, back in the day, they were race car drivers. They just drove anything. And it was all about getting in the car any day of the week, you know, not just weekends, and driving, okay? Today, the drivers are a little bit more on the specialized side. So a Formula One driver just really drives a Formula One car. An IndyCar guy just really drives an IndyCar. NASCAR guy, really a NASCAR guy. And a GT car, pretty much a GT car. Although there are a handful of drivers that are out there that are still very good and can drive just about any car and have the drive and ambition, if you want to use that word, to drive other race cars besides, you know, the one that they predominantly sit behind the wheel in, a.k.a. NASCAR, Formula One, and so on, and or IndyCar, NASCAR, and road racing, on. At any rate, so this gentleman had, you know, in the 60s, 50s and 60s, that's what a lot of race car drivers did. So regardless of whether you're in the United States or whether you're in Europe, that's what you did. Now, we've had a number of well-known race car drivers on our show over the years, and we've had Americans that competed in Le Mans. Le Mans is kind of like the pinnacle. It's like the, if you want to use the term, the Super Bowl of road racing. The Grand Prix, Formula One Grand Prix that they have over there are kind of like the pinnacle of Grand Prix racing, and it could be, you know, the Austrian Ring, Nürburgring, or someplace like that, Nürburgring. And I'm not sure if they run Formula One in Nürburgring. I knew they do in Mons and Spa. Oh, they used to do Spa. Maybe they still do. But I know they're racing all over the world now. It used to be just predominantly in Europe, and now they're, you know, in the Mideast and the Far East and all over the place. Nonetheless, racing's racing, and racing's still a huge sport. In Europe, racing is a huge sport. I think it's the number one sport next to soccer. In the United States, you know, ball sports kind of take precedence over it, but NASCAR is probably the next closest thing to, you know, a national sport, if you will. Anyway, so this gentleman's coming on. He's going to be talking about how he was involved in the production of that movie and the story, the little incident that actually gave him the opportunity to get into this particular field, if you will. So he did that for a number of years, and then after he got done doing a couple of movie scenes, some stunt driving, he was involved in motorcycle racing, and he got a Kawasaki franchise, and then one thing led to another, and then he was involved with Red Bull for a while, did some marketing with them, and then he was a safety driver for UMTT, which is the Austrian version of AAA, I guess, yeah, something like that. At any rate, so hopefully you'll tune into the story, stick around. Tune into the show, I rather, and stick around and listen to the rest of the show. And you might find it very interesting. In the meantime, I think what we're going to do is we're going to fire up maybe another cool song from back in the day. And then I might play some clips from both movies. And we're actually going to do part one and part two with this gentleman. And so I'll tell you he's German. He speaks very good English, but it's broken. And it's in a German accent. And then every once in a while, I might throw in some German stuff because I speak a little German as well. But anyway, hey, you're tuned into Nostalgia Radio and Cars. Don't touch that dial. I'll be right back.
What goes up must come down. Spinning wheel, got to go round. Talking about your troubles, it's a crying sin. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel spin. You got no money and you got no home. Spinning wheel all alone. Talking about your troubles and you never learn. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel turn. Did you find the directing sign on the straight and narrow highway? Would you mind a reflecting sign? Just let it shine within your mind and show you the colors that are real.
Das ist Jochen Maas, hallo, und Sie hören Nostalgic, Radio und Autos. Wunderbar.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, sports fans, car guys, it's time to introduce our special guest for the evening. I am delighted to welcome this gentleman to our show. This gentleman is actually from Austria. I spent some time there as a kid, but he's best known as being one of the stunt drivers and stunt coordinator for the James Bond movie, the 69 thriller that came out on Her Majesty's Secret Service, featuring Diana Riggs and Jordan Lazenby. And this gentleman doubled as Diana Riggs' driver in her car, in the Cougar, 69 Cougar. And also, he was a stunt driver and stunt coordinator on the movie Le Mans with Steve McQueen. I'm delighted to welcome to the show this evening, all the way from Austria, Erich Glawicka. Erich, how are you this evening?
Yeah, great. Good evening. It's a long way.
Long way, yeah.
Well, from Vienna.
Yeah, well, I'll say Servus wie geht's, as we say in Österreich, in Austria, right?
Yeah. Right in Vienna, where they think that the Danube is blue, but in reality, it has never been blue.
It's the Blue Danube, yeah, the song. Erich, give us a little background on yourself. Tell us how you kind of got interested in cars. I mean, you were telling me earlier you grew up in a little town in Austria, didn't have a lot of money, got into journalism, earned a little money, then got into racing. Give us a backstory here.
Well, you know, after the Second World War, the motoring was fast rising in the years of 50. I mean, immediately after the Second World War, there were only motorcycles, and then came those tiny little cars, the three-wheelers from BMW and so on, Messerschmitt and this company. But then the motoring was rising up very, very fast. You know, cars were coming, and faster cars, and motor racing played quite a big role when we were a boy. And of course, there were no green movements in the 50s, you know, so everybody was just dreaming going flat out. And my first contact to motorsport general was speedway racing in a city close to my hometown. And you know, the speedway with the British Jap engines, this oval racing, and there was no car racing at all. Car racing started in Austria at the end of the 50s, and it was done by very wealthy men, you know, owners of large industries, movie stars. They were buying Ferraris, Mercedes 300 SL, Porsches. And the races started in Austria actually on open courses, on open road, and on airport. I mean, that's a big difference to the United States, where racing actually started on ovals, on horse tracks and Indianapolis ovals and so on. Racing in ovals never started in Europe, very, very late. I mean, even now, ovals are very, very not very popular over here. So of course, we have permanent racetracks now. But in the 50s, racing was done on open roads and on airfields. And open roads actually ended abruptly after the big accident in Le Mans, when Mike Hawthorn collided with another car, and you know, the Levex Mercedes flew into the Tribunes, and there were 80 people killed. So at that time, road racing was forbidden in Austria and in Switzerland. And a close friend of mine, Martin Pfundner, it's a Viennese industrial guy, saw circuit racing in England on airfield. In England, on the east coast of Great Britain, there were many airfields from the Second World War. And there they started to race on this concrete field. And Martin Pfundner saw this and brought this idea to Austria. So our first races in Austria were on airfields, in Graz, in Vienna, in Zeltweg, and so on. And it ended actually in 1964 with even a Formula One Grand Prix with second place Richie Ginter, the U.S. driver Richie Ginter, which was a very nice guy. There was the Austrian Grand Prix on the airfield of Zeltweg. But then years later, they quit Zeltweg, and then they made it a so-called permanent racetrack close in Zeltweg. That's where now the Austrian Grand Prix for Formula One cars is being held.
Is that also called the Österreichring?
That's right. That's right. The Österreichring, which later was then, you know, it was enclosed, and then it was called the A1 ring. A1 is the Austrian telecom communication company. And now Red Bull, Dieter Mateschitz, bought the whole thing. Actually, just one side sentence. Dieter Mateschitz was joining. He was a neighbor in my classroom for me, and we were very close friends until his death, which was very tragic. Even, you know, I was many years, I was a sole distributor of Kawasaki motorcycles here in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sold this company. And then around 5 years, I was in top management with Dieter Mateschitz in his Red Bull company. After the, 2000, then I changed to the ÖAMDC, to the Austrian Touring Club, as a driving instructor for driving safety and so on.
Interesting.
Well,
tell us about your experiences as a race car driver, because you drove Formula Three, I think, and V, and then you also did rally driving too. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Yes, in those days in the 60s, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You were driving everything. It's not, you know, now only Formula One driving, only Sloan Canoe, you were driving everything. And also, you know, we were driving rallies. You know, I was driving for Citroën in the team for the European Championship. And these rallies were day and night, day through for 3 days, because they were 2,000, 3,000 kilometers long, those rallies. And with no stop at the hotel nowadays. It's forbidden for them to drive during night. I think only Monte Carlo rally. But okay, I was driving rallies first for Volvo Sweden, and I won a rally down in southern France, and then I was driving for NSU. Are you familiar with this?
Brand? NSU, okay. Deutsches Auto.
Yeah, with the NSU TTS racer, and then I got the contract for Citroën, and I was driving Citroën. And my last rally I did up at the Polar Circle up in Finland, the Tunturi rally. But you know, with my engagement with movie business, it was not able for me anymore to do any serious racing, because, for example, the James Bond film lasted 2 months, but the preparation, I had to prepare the 25 cars and to organize the racetrack and, you know, flying every week, 2 times between Vienna to London and back. You know, I was very busy for half a year. I was working. The film stunt was only 3 or 4 weeks, something like this. But then came Le Mans, and Le Mans lasted actually from April to November. So I was actually out of racing.
Eric, tell us a story about how you had the accident in Romania when you were driving a rally car and a journalist happened to be there. And that's what gave you your break to become the stunt coordinator for the movie James Bond. Tell us that story. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the funny thing is, this was we were driving the Citroën and we were very well placed.
Yeah.
It was the second night, so 2 days, 2 nights. And in the around 1 o'clock midnight or 2 o'clock midnight, near Târgu Mureș, which is in the center of Romania, but in those days they were all communist countries.
Yeah.
You know, it was absolutely black at night. There were no lights in houses and so nothing. And we were driving in heavy pouring rain in Târgu Mureș, and we were a little bit in a hurry. Actually, we were very well placed. We were second overall. And there was a gate, a train gate, or how do you call it, you know, which is coming down?
Yeah, train gate, that's fine.
A train gate. And the car, Pauli Toivonen, in front of us with the Porsche, also saw the gate too late. And on the gate was just a little lamp, a petrol lamp. And you couldn't anyway see it in the pouring rain. So he hit with his Porsche this lamp. And destroyed his windscreen, but the Porsche mechanics were waiting just 200 yards after the train gate and just changed his windscreen, and then we were just coming, and there was nothing, just this large heavy steel tube, and I just saw it too late, and I just said to my co-driver, get down, and boom, and you know, so the Citroën got skyped. You know, the complete head came off, and we hit the locomotive, and we jumped out. Everything fired. It was 2 o'clock at night, and at this gate were standing an Austrian journalist rally journalist, Herbert Völker. He's quite famous here, with two German friends, also journalists. They were watching us. And actually, Völker helped me to bring us to the next hotel. And my co-driver, Peter Huber, said, well, because I was just standing there and was looking into the dark, saying nothing. And Peter asked Herbert, do you think that Eric remains like this until the rest of his life? And Herbert said, I'm afraid not. So they just cleaned my head and my, you know, my hair from all these little glass pieces from the windscreen. And then the next day, the organizer brought us down to Brasov and, you know, and back home. And this journalist, and yes, and at the same time, Harry Saltzman was working on the new James Bond, a book on 007 on Her Majesty's Secret Service. And in this book, there's during a car chase, there's a horse race, like they have in Davos and in St. Moritz, you know, with horses on ice, snow, and the sledge behind or skier behind, this sort of race. And Saltzman said, okay, I don't want a horse race. I would like a car race. And the reason was because at that time, Frankenheimer just started with the Grand Prix film. Paul Newman started with the, I think, also a car race film. I think 500 Indy or something like this. And the French producer or director Lelouch started with Un Mann und eine Frau. I don't know how it's called in France. But these were films where car racing, motorsport was within the script. And Saltzman decided to change the horse race into a car race. Okay? So he was calling Hubert Fröhlich. He was the production director of the James Bond film. And he told him, Hubert, just get us some stunt driver. I would like to have this car race. And at that time, the stuntman, the classic stuntman, they were able to jump from horses or from windows, from houses, and to knock themselves out by a fist fight, but they were not able to drive cars. Racing drivers, they were a little bit anxious really to hit the tree. And I think I was stupid enough that I didn't have any problems with that. And, you know, Hubert Fröhlich called this journalist who was standing at the train down in Romania and watched me. And he said, do you know someone to make accidents with cars? And then the journalist said, yeah, I know a crazy guy in Vienna, completely stupid. He can do it. So they were calling me. And this was actually then the story. And then I was flying to England and meeting Saltzman and, you know, and the whole, it was quite a lot of work because I had to organize 20 cars. So I contacted Walter Hayes. He was the general president of Ford Europe. And I met him once months before the race in Brands Hatch. And I was asking him, and so I got from him, he supplied me with 24 escorts.
Uh-huh.
And then I brought them all to Vienna, and a group of guys who were painting them to race cars. And then, you know, I organized tires from Avon, England. I knew the guys from Rally and spiked the tires and everything. And so this was the story.
Did you have any influence in them? Because they used a 69 Cougar 428 Cobra Jet car in the movie. Did you have any influence selecting that particular car? Or how did they decide they were going to use that car?
No. There were three cars. The film production, EON Film Production was the name.
Uh-huh.
Harry Saltzman and Broccoli, they were these guys, the producers. And they already had from Ford England three Cougars. One Cougar was always in London at Pinewood Studios, mm-hmm. I remember.
Yeah.
And two cars we had. And one car I could use for driving action and hitting other cars. And one Cougar had to stay clean and beautiful, you know.
So now you are the stunt coordinator. So take us through the process a little bit, like how you set up on the ice racing, set up the crashes, because it was, you know, the chase car was a Mercedes, and eventually that crashed. Were you driving the Cougar from time to time? Were you doubling for Diana Riggs?
Yes, yes. I was traveling down the rig. There are many nice pictures here because I think my breast was not, she had much bigger breast than mine. Now, she was a marvelous young lady who had so much fun together. And I, you know, I was with a fur hat and a fur coat, and you know, I was doubling her, and yes, and then I had to roll the Mercedes. You know, I just let the guys build this racetrack. I had to hit the barrier, and then the Mercedes came off, and I rolled it on the roof.
Yeah.
And before, I had to roll two escorts.
Okay, so all the cars that were rolled in the movie, you actually did that?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
I was the only one who did the accidents, yeah.
What did you use to roll the cars, what did you use for stunt equipment, you know, props and stuff? Did you have to have wedges there so that you roll the cover? Because it looks like you, no?
Nothing. Just, you know, seat belts, the ordinary safety belt.
Yeah.
Not a harness, a safety belt. Not even a roll bar. The reason is because you must imagine that the speeds on an ice track are pretty low.
Okay.
You know, you're rolling the cars with 50, 60 miles an hour. But not, I mean, Le Mans was full speed. Huh? Le Mans was 200 miles an hour. Not faster. Huh? But James Bond in this ice track was 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. So no problem. We didn't have to reinforce the roofs or something like this.
Okay. Whatever happened to the Cougars? Because, you know, a lot of my listeners are collector car guys, and a lot of us are Ford guys. So whatever happened to the Cougars? And we know one reason.
Hundreds of people are calling me and asking me, where are the Cougars?
Uh-huh.
And I had no idea. Many years later, I got some contacts from Sweden. So I think that our crashed cars, you know, but only on the side banked cars that really crashed.
Uh-huh.
Because we never rolled the Cougar. I rolled the Mercedes, I rolled two escorts. But the Cougar was just hit from the side. So the front fender and the door was a little bit bent. Yeah?
Okay.
But not because at 60 miles an hour, the Cougar doesn't really move. You know, when a 900 kilo S-cut is going running into him, I mean, the Cougar is not even blinking. Yeah. But many years later, someone contacted me from Sweden, and they were sending me engine numbers and chassis numbers. But in those days, I never looked at any engine numbers or chassis numbers. And I said, maybe this could be that the Cougar they have up in Sweden, and they are restoring it. That maybe this is a car from the James Bond film, but original, I'm not really sure.
Okay.
You know, and I can't really say yes. This is because in those days, you know, I was 26 years old, and believe me, I was looking more for girls. Is for the Cougar.
Gotcha. Okay. So when they set the Cougar up, you know, and some of these cars, like for close-ups and stuff, did they have to, like, remove the doors, take some, you know, mount video equipment on the vehicles? Were you involved in any of that? Or?
That's right. Because I also put my personal Mini Cooper, which I used for autocross and rallies over here. I also took it a stunt car. And this car we modified to a camera car. I mean, in the film, you see sometimes this red Mini Cooper.
Uh-huh.
And this is my car. And we used this car also as camera car.
Okay.
And there was this famous ski racer, German ski racer, Willy Bogner. I'm not sure whether you remember him.
No.
From the days of Jean-Claude Killy, you know, 60s.
And Franz Klammer. I remember Franz Klammer.
Yeah, Gamma was Franz was much later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Gamma was in the late 70s and 80s. Now, Willy Bogner was with Jean-Claude Killy. This was in the early 60s.
Uh-huh.
And when they quit their skiing career, they continued as you know, cameraman and so forth. Willy Bogner was one of our action cameras for special special effect cameraman.
Uh-huh.
And we put them in the Mini, in my Mini, and we put the seats out and from the rear door, you know, where I could put some luggage in.
Yeah.
There we mounted the camera, and Willie was lying in there, and I was driving him around between the other cars, and, you know, and he was shooting some close-ups.
Oh.
Action close-ups.
Okay. Did you guys have to do a lot of takes, and were they ever taken in slow motion and then they speed the film up during the production? How did that work?
Yes, but in those, you know, we were not going really that fast. Of course, we used the slow motion camera, but really slow motion, high speed slow motion, we used at the Le Mans picture with Steve McQueen then. You know, because there I did the accident with, 250 miles an hour, you know, and there you really need these high-speed cameras, which these cameras had the disadvantage. The time they were taking were only 10 seconds,
wow.
Or 15 seconds, because during this time they just were shooting the whole film through. And then on the projector, they had this slow motion.
Well, now, since you touched let's touch on Le Mans now. So how did you get the opportunity to work on the movie Le Mans? They were looking for stunt drivers as well, and then you...
Yes, yeah. Now, the thing was, our shooting for James Bond was over, I think, in February. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I had from then on a Ford contract and was racing for Ford, and also did Formula V races. As I told you, we raced everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Whatever car, I was doing rallies and races and hill climbs and call it, I did it. It's not like today that they were only specializing. And I think it was in summer. Because we were working on a premiere party in Vienna at the Gartenbau Cinema, which is in the center of Vienna. Doing a big party, James Bond party. Yeah? And I was inviting the camera crew and many guys from the crew, and were inviting and put them in the hotels, and we had a lot of fun, girls and discos at night. So it was really, Vienna was one big party. And during this party, I was also calling Hubert Fröhlich. Huh?
Uh-huh.
I was calling him in Hamburg. Where he was at that time living. You know, he was also a production director in the film The Great Escape.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember The Great Escape?
Oh, yeah. That had Steve McQueen in it.
Yeah, that's right. And Bronson and all these guys.
Uh-huh.
And many, many other American productions. So I was calling Hubert and it was very difficult to reach him at home. No, he's in Munich, so I called Munich and up in Frankfurt. And then someone said, no, he's in the States. And they said, he's in the States? Yeah, he's in the States. And they gave me, they supplied me a telephone number from Hollywood, I remember. So I was calling him, and the time I called him, of course, when it was 1 o'clock at night, and Hubert said, Erica, you're crazy, it's midnight. And I said, now, Hubert, I thought you're in Germany because we have the big James Bond party. And I really want to invite you. And he said, nah, it's impossible because I'm working on a new film project. And then he made a pause, a couple of seconds, and then he always said, Eric, do you have time next year? Then, because this was 1969, and he was asking whether I have time 1970. And I said, yes, of course, no problem. And he said, yeah, I'm here. But don't tell anyone, otherwise I'm going to kill you. It's top secret. I'm here, yeah, because it's typically Hubert. I'm here and negotiating with Steve McQueen about a car race project. And I said, yes, really? Yeah, we're working on the car chase, but don't tell, not even Peter, to tell, not even your girlfriends. No, nobody knows. Don't worry. No? And he's coming, and then he's telling me everything. And when he then came from the United States to Europe, he always said, Eric, get in your car and go to Le Mans. And you know, that's a long way, you know, because there were no highways in those days. So I went into my Beamer, BMW 202, and went straight to Le Mans. And there was Hubert, but only with cameraman. And he said, yeah, we're planning to make a film about the race. Wow, fantastic. And yes, I have time, no problem. And what do you know about Le Mans? I said, yes, I was here in 60, a couple of times, 65, 66, and maybe 67. I don't remember when Dan Gurney won with H.G. Floyd. I was also there.
67.
Yeah, 67. Yeah, 67. Mm-hmm. And I was also 66 there. And I said, yes, I told him, and then he said, okay, because he wants to make a film. And so I went back to Vienna, and then after a while, a manager from Hollywood, from Solar Production, was at that time Steve McQueen's company, was meeting me in a hotel in the center of Vienna. And you know, we were just having some dinner in the evening, and then he went back home. He said, okay, we will make you a contract for to do the accidents. But I don't know how many accidents and what accidents, but Steve is planning accidents. And Steve was asking Hubert, and Hubert said, yeah, I know a Viennese guy who is a car racer and can do accidents. So they had me on the paper. And then in 1970, I think it was in March or early April, I was going to Le Mans. And then the whole thing started, and I left Le Mans in November.
So tell us about some of this, some of the stunts and the crashes and your relationship with Steve McQueen, because you guys got to be pretty good friends, right?
Yes. The funny thing is, Steve was a very difficult character. But especially within the movie society, you know what I mean? Without the other really actors, not me, really actors and the cameraman and the director. You know, you must imagine we first had the famous director John Sturges from The Magnificent Seven. Are you familiar with that?
Oh,
thing?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Steve McQueen was in that movie, too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he made also the film Great Escape and so on. Yeah.
Right.
And actually, yeah, The Magnificent Seven, well, John Sturges told me that he actually invented Steve McQueen through The Magnificent Seven, because before he was only in minor TV roles. Mm-hmm. And it was in June, I think, in June, John Sturges and Steve McQueen got completely crossed up. And the thing was that John Sturges wanted a script, a story, a film story, you know, with girls and kids and everything, yeah? So he engaged Ken Purdy. Ken Purdy was a book writer about motor racing. Ken Purdy wrote the book All About My Life. It's a very famous book about Stirling Moss. And John Sturges and the film company engaged Ken Purdy to write a script, but a movie script. And Steve McQueen said, I don't want a movie script. And I remember very well that we were together driving in his Porsche 911 down the Mulsanne, down the straight in Notier, down to Mulsanne. And when we were going down, then Steve told me, you know, I want to make a film about the real race. And I see him again. I don't want the film story, you know, with girl with big tits standing here, a spectator, and two racing cars are passing them, and one of the driver sees the girl, and suddenly the engine goes dun dun, and he's overtaking him. That's crap. Huh?
Yeah.
I want a real story about this race, a 24-hour race, which is actually a very boring, in reality, a very boring thing. You know, the only thing, you can be there with your girlfriend and get drunk, but the race itself, you must imagine, they are driving on the 10-mile a circuit or a 12-mile circuit or something like this for 24 hours a night through early morning and then until lunchtime. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. No? The people, there are more than 200,000 people there, you know, and there's circus, there's striptease, there's horse riding, there's everything. I mean, it's completely out of your head. It's a complete crazy party, and Steve wanted to bring it because he was completely into racing at that time. You know, at that time he had a Porsche 908. He was driving the 12-hour race in Sebring together with Peter Revson. They came home second place, general place, and he was completely into car racing. And he wants to, you know, that he told me, you have to smell racing, not tits. Right? and then John Sturges was completely crazy. And I remember another day when John Sturges told me, I'm completely sick from these cars. I already have headache from the noise, these stupid cars. And Mr. Superstar, and he pointed to a little shed where Steve McQueen had his office or his private rooms. And he's just thinking about the cars. And then John Sturges, I think it was in June or July, he came out of Hubert Fröhlich's office because I was sitting with my friend outside. And Sturges said to me at that time, you know, 1970, he said, I just gave him a check about $100,000 and I bail out. And I said, what? I mean, $100,000 was a large sum in those days. And he backed and was going. He said, I have two motorboats in Hollywood, three Porsches, eight girls are waiting for me, and I'm you know, I'm not to discuss with this idiot over there the film story. And he went. And at that time, the whole project stopped because the major sponsor, it was Columbia or something like this, or it was a large film company, they stopped the budget. And there was, and the outcome, you know, to make this story short, was that Steve McQueen said, okay, I don't want to get any money out of it. So he reduced his what's his fee? His
salary, no, right?
Yes, his salary, right? His salary of zero. And he had to accept another director because otherwise, John Sturges would have come back and the main role would have Redford.
Oh.
Yeah. It was just that close. But then Steve said, no, I want to make this movie. I don't want to get any money for it. And zero. And I'm going to accept this other a director by the name of Lee Katzin. Lee Katzin was a completely unknown U.S. TV director. And with him, actually, he had very easy play, you know, because he just juggled with him like he wanted, you know, it was terrible. Mm-hmm. And Lee Katzin, you know, was drinking, standing with his glass of whiskey, standing around. And Steve said, we do this, we do that. I mean, I think you must imagine Steve's close friend, Jack Reddish. Jack Reddish is an America ex-ski racer who told me, when he introduced himself to me, he said, Eric, I was the only one who shoots the Osthang in St. Anton. Yeah. And so, you know, I was asking Carl Schanz and they all remember this crazy guy. He really went the whole Osthang straight down without getting killed. And he was the director, second unit director, so called. Second unit, you should know. The first unit director is the director with all the film stars.
Uh huh.
Okay. the movie stars. The second unit director is responsible for the action.
Uh-huh.
So my director was actually Jack Radish.
Interesting.
Yeah, because and I actually got from Steve, I have a triple role. I had the role of an actor. I was Josef Hauser. That's now a different story. Why yeah. Josef Hauser? I was Josef Hauser. I was the second driver of Sigi Rauch, the main competitor of Michael Delaney of Steve McQueen. You know, in this film, there's this battle, Steve McQueen in the Porsche and Sigi Rauch in the Ferrari. And I was the second driver to Sigi Rauch. The only thing is that sometimes you see me in the film, and at one moment, I tell him in heavy Austrian dialect, always in Ordnung, mein Auto. Ne? This is my, you know, everything is okay. Ne?
Okay.
Because my wife saw the premiere in London and she was laughing loud and she heard me to say on Styrian dialect, always in Ordnung. Ne? Yeah, it was fun. And so I had this role, a contract as a film actor. Then I was one of the drivers who drove the cars in all this driving, the drive-by scene. And then the third contract was for my accident. It's just time driver.
Interesting. Eric, on that note,
yeah.
What I'm going to do is this. There's so much more to talk about because you've actually authored some books, and I also wanted to get into Jochen Rindt a little bit and some of the other stuff that you've done. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to conclude this interview as part one, and then what I'd like to do is bring you back again, and we'll do part two with Eric Glavitsa. So if you're okay with that, I want to thank you very much for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and we'll look forward to doing part two, and he'll be telling us about some of his movie stuff. So Eric, thank you very much for hanging out with us here at Nostalgic Radio and Cars, and I wish you all the best. And as we say in Austria, Servus, Tschüss und bis bald.
Servus.
Just about. All right, I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in to Nostalgic Radio and Cars this evening. Don't forget to check us out here every Tuesday between 7 and 8 p.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network. Be sure and tell your friends to tune in for some of the most legendary and fascinating names in motorsports and music. Don't forget to follow us on social media. That's Facebook, Instagram, I think that Twitter thing. And, hey, you know, the summer's here, so if you're not driving your cars or your motorcycles, get out and drive your boats, too. But nonetheless, stay safe, drive carefully, and love your family.